Don't forget this Wednesday, Smashville Live. Be out in Chase's neck of the woods in Bellevue. Brewhouse 100 at 8098 Highway 100. Show will be from 7 until 8 o'clock. Of course, every week, Smashville Live. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company, and Red Spirits and Wine. Every Monday, we head east. We go to Knoxville. Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal there in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Vinny, how you doing?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. Not better than the Chiefs and their fans and their organization, but we're doing good. What'd you think of the Super Bowl?
Well, it was entertaining and close. I liked it. Obviously, it looked like the two best teams on paper going into the game. I don't know that either one of them maybe showed their best performance in the game, but you could see a lot of the reasons during the game why they were there. It was weird. I didn't think either one of them played to their strengths during a good part of the game. I thought Kansas City was taking San Francisco off the hook a little bit with running the ball. And sure, it moved the chains, but I think it shortened the game a little bit, and I'm not sure that Mahomes settled in until they needed to when they were down 10. And, San Francisco, just run the ball. I mean, that's what made them so successful. I thought they didn't do it enough. They didn't have a ton of possessions. Late in the first half, it could have been more aggressive, and then the OPI was an issue. But, man, a play like if you want to, put the game away, do what you do best. And I didn't think San Francisco did that. And obviously coughing up that 21-point lead. And, when they up 10 and then got the pick and they quickly gave the ball back to Kansas City, I did not feel good about San Francisco. I thought that was the open door for KC to let it loose, and they did. They went hurry up, and, that one's going to sting for the 49ers, and Kyle Shanahan's going to take a lot of grief because I thought there were certainly opportunities for them. But give the Chiefs and Mahomes credit. They've shown that you don't have to be great the entire game when you got that kind of talent and that kind of skill. The opportunity was there, and they went through it. And their defense is a little bit better than maybe I give them credit for. But San Francisco played a little role in that and not just running the ball down their throat with regularity.
Well, I think they do deserve some credit because I know Mahomes and their offense will get all the credit for this successful season. But there were two guys that came into the game against the Chiefs defense that were as hot can be. Derrick Henry in the AFC Championship game, and he ran for, 69 yards? And Mostert came in, 220 yards and four touchdowns in the NFC Championship game, and they held him in the, 54 yards rushing. So I do think they deserve credit.
But, Darren, I don't think he got his first carry until midway through the second quarter. So, a little bit of that is just the way it played out, play calling. Look, San Francisco had other options, Debo Samuel, the other guys that they can go to, and they didn't have a ton of possessions because Kansas City was holding on to the ball also. So a little bit, and even going back the week before, I think the Titans, once Kansas City went on that spurt, I think Tennessee gave up on the run game a little bit, and they abandoned the run game a little bit also. So, yes, better than they used to be, and in the end, good enough to win it. But I think there was some other factors involved in that also.
Cole Kmet gets another Super Bowl ring. Their family keeps collecting Super Bowl rings. Not bad.
How about that? Yep. How about that? We actually talked to his brother, Britton, who's with the Vikings, and we talked to him yesterday on our NFL show. And, he said his dad, who also has one, Greg, played at Tennessee, that he was just beside himself with excitement and anticipation for it. So It is a rare thing to have a family with, I mean, you've seen brothers, but man, to have a father and two kids all with Super Bowl rings, pretty special. And Britton kind of took a shot at the Browns too, his former team, for firing him, as his kid said, during the year. So that was funny. But yeah, that just a good for Dustin. He's a great guy. The whole family is a bunch of great people. And you know, Tennessee has produced a lot of quality punters through the years, and there's another one with a Super Bowl. 11th straight year a Tennessee player has been on a winning team in the Super Bowl.
Wow. 11 straight years?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Can you name them all?
Well, does anybody know what the longest streak would be? That'd be an interesting one to know.
That would be interesting. Obviously, yeah, last year, the Patriots, you know, Barnett the year before that. Wow, we could go through. That's interesting. 11 straight years, man.
Yep.
Hmm. I'd love to know, you know, what schools could put – what's the longest streak that, say, LSU or Alabama, Ohio State – I mean, go right down the line.
Right.
And how would that
– back.
And do you count guys on the practice squad and stuff like that? Like, you know, Vanderbilt had, like, four guys in the game yesterday. I mean, they didn't all get in the game, but they were on the rosters.
Right. I would think there would be the 53-player roster. And, you know, maybe if you're on the roster but not active, you know, that would still count. But, you know, no, I don't think practice squad would count.
Yeah, you'd have
that.
To define the parameters on, right. on what counts.
All right, when we come back, National Signing Day on Wednesday, the basketball team. A lot's changed since our last conversation last Monday. If you remember what we were talking about, ooh, things have gone the wrong way since that conversation. A lot more with Vince Ferrara on the other side. WNML in Knoxville, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Vince Ferrara talking Big Orange with us here on the show, as he does every week at this time. So, Vince, I got a chance to see the Tennessee game at Mississippi State. It is such a hard read right now when you're trying to figure out which teams are NCAA tournament teams, which teams are not. I find myself watching a lot of games where I'm saying, is this a definite NCAA tournament team? There's not a whole lot of teams that fit that bill. Mississippi State is an interesting one. They look really good to me. They've got a resume that would seem to have them sort of, I guess, on the bubble when it comes down to it. Maybe on the good side of the bubble. But I don't know. But it was a little disappointing for Tennessee not to be able to stay a little closer and have a chance. Down the stretch, a good start to the second half for Mississippi State.
Yeah, Mississippi State won five straight in the SEC after starting 0-3 in league play. And Joe Lunardi, with that win over Tennessee, said that slid them in at the time. I mean, that was just in the middle of the afternoon on Saturday. That could have his cut line could have changed.
Three times since then, maybe.
Right. Exactly. I mean, they're a team, very athletic, play inside out. They were going into the game, they were the number two rebounding team in the country. So, you know, they turned things up defensively, and Tennessee just had difficulty with it. And, you know, Tennessee's had problems turning the ball over, and Mississippi State turned those into buckets or three-pointers. And they got hot from three. Even guys that weren't making a lot of threes going into the game were hitting them once they got rolling. So, you know, Tennessee just does not have a lot of answers right now. And, you know, this is a time, Willie, where with what they're struggling with, having lost three straight to Kansas, where they play pretty well on the road, and then at home to A&M, which – was head scratching, and then this one, which you knew would be tough, but one that they needed to win if they wanted to at least still be in any sort of realistic conversation for the NCAA tournament at the moment. This is very clear right now. What they're struggling with is what Lamonte Turner, if he was playing and healthy, and I mean both, he could help them with a lot of their issues. They, right now, when they get into a rut offensively, especially in the half court, they don't have someone to shoot them out of it. And Lamonte Turner was great at it last year. Even with all the stars they had at times, Tennessee would go through a little lull where they wouldn't score. And inevitably, it would be Lamonte Turner to hit a big ice in his veins three that would sort of wake everybody up, and then they'd get rolling after that. They don't have that kind of shot maker right now. Jordan Bowden was supposed to be that guy, but he's not a Batman. He's a Robin. And he's a terrific kid, a good defender. But right now, he has not embraced the lead dog role. He doesn't have that killer mentality that Lamonte Turner did, and that clutch shot making and taking over. Bowden doesn't drive the lane enough. Lamonte Turner can help him in that area. Turner could bring them perimeter defense. And then the leadership aspect as well. All those things are lacking from this team right now. And then obviously if they had Turner, then Bowden could play more of that supporting role, and he would be more comfortable there. He's not there, so it doesn't matter. But I think the point is that a lot of these struggles are things that they were hoping to get from Lamonte Turner. I don't know if the answers are on this roster right now. I think it's going to be difficult for guys to improve enough during this season for that to happen. You know, even guys off of last year's team, guys that went to the NBA, those are multiple-year development guys. Those weren't first season, it clicked late in the year. It was a process.
And we lost fans.
And a zap job.
He got zapped.
I'll throw this out there as we get him back on, and then I will be heading to the flight deck.
Peg.
Yeah, the peg. It's an interesting rest of the scheduling for Tennessee. They still have two games left with Auburn, two with Kentucky, and two with Arkansas. And Arkansas came back. They were down 12-0 to start the game and came back and beat Alabama. I still think they're a talented team, even though they're wacky. You know, they'll throw up some crazy shots. But it's interesting. You still, in this day and age where there's 14 teams in the league, you don't play a lot of teams twice. They still have home and homes with those three. So it's a double-edged sword. There's still opportunities to get nice wins for Tennessee, but it doesn't look good. Their projections right now in the KenPom are in that, you know, 8-10 range. It's a pretty difficult schedule, but you know, they're going to have to play a little bit above of what they have played so far if they're going to get in or get into the discussion.
Vince, I know we got you back. And shifting back into football, National Signing Day coming up on Wednesday. We've been hitting on this quite a bit lately, but it's obviously changed things with the early signing period, and then you kind of have two waves of it. But what are you expecting the Vols to be announcing on Wednesday?
Well, you're not going to see them sign a ton of guys. I mean, they're mostly done. They're in on a five-star running back in Zach Evans, who is taking a lot of late visits, and a former Georgia signee that got out of his national letter of intent. And that would obviously be a big get. Deep Beckwith, who is an athlete that Tennessee kind of projects to play multiple different positions on offense, and they need more skill players. Also, a former Florida State commit wide receiver. Tennessee's in on him. I mean, those are probably the three biggest targets. They're doing a lot of work in the 2021 class right now. I'm not sure that they would add bodies just for the sake of getting numbers, but I think beyond those three, you may see, maybe a little bit lower rated offensive or defensive linemen perhaps get moved into the mix if they're not able to land any of those bigger targets. But I think it'll be quiet. There'll be a few guys. There'll probably be some, you know, preferred walk-on type of guys that they'll bring into the mix, but those won't be signing day announcement types. You'll see those come in later. So I think it's going to be fairly quiet, although in the early signing period, out of the guys that weren't committed, they pulled in five that they really wanted. So we'll see if they have similar success. If they do, then, you know, they're have a chance to maybe slide up in the rankings.
Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal in Knoxville, here with us every Monday at noon on Darren Donick and Chase. So the XFL, I'm not sure if I'm excited about it or intrigued or a little bit of both. Obviously, the wrestling connection with Vince McMahon being the owner, but he's going to do it differently this time. He has football people in place. But four Vols will be in the XFL when it debuts this weekend. What are you expecting out of them?
Well, I think it's interesting. Khalil McKenzie is one of them who never really fully played up to his potential as a five-star lineman and ultimately moved to the offensive line, a Kansas City Chief until a year ago. And so he was with Seattle with their practice squad this past year. He's on the Los Angeles team. You got Micah Abernathy, Venzel Bulware, a couple other guys that are there. So, and then LaTroy Lewis is with Houston, and he was with the Texans in the NFL and also a little bit with the Titans, as you guys know. So those are the guys in the XFL. Right now, I don't think there's, as long as the XFL doesn't keep those guys from still pursuing NFL opportunities, then I think it's cool. It's great because they get on the field work in the spring, and then maybe they can still get some NFL chances later on if they show out. But you know, I've also heard that there's been guys where they wanted they signed with the XFL and they wanted an opportunity in the NFL and they wouldn't let them out of their deal. Now maybe that was something they've changed course on. I don't think that's the right approach for the XFL. In terms of excitement for it, I'm with you, Chase. I've seen commercials for it, but I'm not feeling it. I wonder if it's a little bit because the AAF had so much attention and hype. We gave it a shot. You looked at it, and then you're like, eh. And then it went away. This is a different setup, but
right.
I just think the expectation is so low, hard to really get invested in. We'll sample in, like you, curiosity with Vince McMahon and how the league 2.0 does, but just not spending a ton of time thinking about it, to be honest.
Here's the crazy part about it is I remember, when it first came, the first version of the XFL, and I was probably 11, 12, something like that, so hardcore into wrestling, all about the WWF. They open it up. The first person you see is The Rock. And so they're combining, wrestling and football and all this stuff. And, now I'm like, don't do that again. Well, then I get hyped last night when they have The Rock doing the introductions for the Super Bowl. So it's different. I like that there is, more football when they're playing the games. It's right after the NFL season ends. I hope it makes it, but I'm with you. I'm just like, if it does, great. If it doesn't, who cares? It's another failed league.
Well, definitely, Chase, their marketing approach has been that it's more legitimate football than alternatives in the NFL. They haven't presented themselves that way with any of their promotions. And, the fact that they're on all the major networks, I think, gives them some validity. But look, if the play isn't very good, and I didn't think the AAF's was that good, if it's not good, even if they have a couple of new rules that are innovative, and if they have the replay booth being so transparent, you get to see it all, yeah, that's cool the first time, but you got to deliver with quality on the field. So I think ultimately, any of those little things that they deem as positive, if the product doesn't deliver and if there aren't names involved in it, I just think it's going to struggle long term.
All right, Vince, good stuff as always. You have a great week, and it'll be interesting to see what we're talking about next Monday.
Yep, you guys do the same. Big one for Tennessee tomorrow night at Alabama, and we'll talk about it next week.
All right, Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal in Knoxville, joins us every Monday starting at high noon. There's some news on the Predators front as they're getting ready to board the plane and head to Winnipeg for Western Canada Swing. They'll be on the road for a bit. We'll tell you about that on the other side here on the third hour of Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Some news. Predators getting a little skate in before they head to the peg. They're actually heading to the airport now and getting ready to take off in a bit. It looks like Cale Yarncroke, who was out Saturday night versus Vegas, will be on the trip but will not play. These are all things coming from head coach John Hines. And also Ryan Ellis will be on the trip, but it doesn't look like he will play, I don't think, from what I saw.
Yeah.
On the on any of these four road games, but
he has been skating on his own.
Getting closer, maybe.
Is what I understand, that he's been skating a little bit on his own. So that's a good sign. I still think it's a ways off, but, I mean, if he's flying, if he's going with the team, being around him, I mean, that you have to feel good about that. Just how close is he? And
it's a tricky subject.
Yeah, and but you know, here's one thing that I've noticed with John Hines. I mean, he's not going to tell you everything, but he's being a little more forthcoming on some of this stuff. He's answering questions about it, and different coaches have different ways of handling it. But Peter Laviolette wouldn't talk about it. He just whenever there was an injury, it was, you know, as little information as he could possibly give, and that was his prerogative. John Hines is different. You know, Barry Trotz was different in how he handled injury information, and that's what you get. But still, with, you know, and David Poile said it on this show, it is a concussion. You have to be very careful with those things. You don't have a timetable because people heal from those in different ways, and, you know, the doctors are going to do everything possible to make sure that, you know, he's safe, and you got to think about long-term well-being before you put him back out there.
I was asked today on Morning Drive on my Monday hits at 9. A good question, but I didn't know how to answer it. And I admitted at the end, it's a pretty lousy answer because I didn't know how to answer it. I really don't. And it's basically, what are they going to do at the deadline? And I don't know. I don't even know what's the right answer. I do believe it's wait and see. I believe it's game by game, minute by minute, hour by hour. I think it could change. I think probably you have a meeting after the New Jersey game. Bless you.
Sorry, thank you.
And then you get in there and have a meeting after the Vegas game, and it may be a completely different conversation. I don't know. I don't know how it could be the same.
It changes so much, though, with this team, because you go two steps forward, one step back.
But that's been now – this is game 51. I mean,
sure.
So what's the right thing? I don't know. I have no idea, like, what's the right approach for David Poile. I'm not envious of his job. I can tell you that.
Yeah, I'm not either.
I wouldn't want to be tasked with that on what to do at the deadline.
It's so interesting to look at the two general managers in this town for, you know, the NFL team and the NHL team, and they both have very tough decisions to make, but completely different types of tough decisions. This is how I will answer that question. The biggest change that you can make in season, you've already made. You've done that. You fired Peter Laviolette. You brought in John Hines. You are now committed to John Hines, as David Poile said last week, for the rest of this season and two more seasons. So, for now, that's your guy. That's what you're going with. You're asking him to change the identity, to change the culture, to fix what is broken, but you're asking him to do that in the middle of the season. And, oh, by the way, at the part of the season where things get so compact, you don't have a ton of practice time, so your time is very valuable. As for the players, sure, he can sell. He can go into sell mode, and he can get rid of some guys, some contracts. But how many of those guys can he realistically trade away just because you have so many that are on long-term deals? I feel like the offseason is more the time where you can really tinker with the lineup, if that's in fact what you want to do.
It depends on what you're talking about. Because I would tell you, it is my belief that people tend to overpay right now, this month.
True.
People traditionally overpay at the deadline. They do. Because all you need to do is find one team that is going for it, and they believe like this piece helps push them, gives them a push that they're looking for. And whatever that may be, a push to get into the playoffs, like in Columbus's case last year, they were looking just to try to make a push and get in the playoffs. And they did. It took all the way to the end, but they got in, and then they upset Tampa in the first round. Was it all worth it? I don't know. I guess it depends on who you ask. Yeah. They got further than they've ever been in franchise history. Other teams, the Predators have certainly done this. It's a push to just try to give you a little extra oomph.
Right.
You know, you feel like you're good, and then maybe it's just a little extra. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. But traditionally, you're going to have somebody overpay at the deadline than in the offseason. Do you agree with that?
No, I totally agree with that.
Like, usually you see more eyebrow raisers at the deadline than in an offseason.
I agree with that, but who are you realistically going to part ways with if you're David Poile? Now, you have the obvious answers. You have expiring contracts of Mikhail Granlund, Craig Smith, probably being the top two. You know, you have some others, Rocco Grimaldi, Dan Hamuse, Irwin, Weber. I mean, those guys are all going to be UFAs. But then you get into the category of Elliot Friedman's been on this show and said he's tried to trade Kyle Turris. I think you're stuck right now. If you haven't done it by now, why do you think it's going to be able to happen?
Well, because the closer you get, the more then finally somebody, sure, especially if they're not having any luck, right? You don't know what changes.
Right.
Maybe the GM's been very active. He's talking to a lot of people, and he thinks he's got something going one direction that completely changes. It gets shut down, or the price gets too high. He slams down the phone, and he's like, crap, I got to do something. I have to present something for our team, whether it's, you know, the Bruins or what, somebody that's like, we got to do something. And then maybe that conversation changes where 3 weeks ago, a month ago, at that point, there was nothing there. But people get desperate.
And I think you have different categories, too, of guys that you can trade if you're the Predators. You have the UFAs, so those are in a category by themselves. Those are the ones that probably are a little easier to part with because they're not under contract next season. Then you have the guys that I would say Nick Bonino, Callie Yarncroak, maybe Austin Watson. You put those in a category of don't really want to, still got some time left on the contract, but if you have to, you know, that maybe there's a hockey trade in there. You do something like that. Then you have the contracts. You have the long-term deals. And the core that we always talk about, the Johansons, the Duchesnes, Forsberg, Arvidsson. Sissons is on a long-term deal now as a part. Josi, Ellis, Ekholm. The guys that you're probably, A, it's going to be really hard to move with the contracts, and B, Are we at that point where you're really going to blow it up? Because you trade one of those guys, I think you're saying that we're making big changes.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're blowing it up.
To an extent. Depends on who it is.
Well,
have
you ever heard sometimes addition by subtraction?
Yes. It depends on who it is.
When you say that, you're not viewing something as a blow up.
No, but it's a big swing. It's a big swing of the sledgehammer, the bat, however you want to put it. But it depends on who it is. I mean, I'm just throwing names out. If all of a sudden they trade Philip Forsberg, that's a big move.
That's not happening. That one's not.
No, I don't think it's happening either, but I'm throwing a name out to throw a name out.
Yeah. Bicycle Boy, what's up?
Hey, fellas. Darren, I heard you this morning. I think most of us feel the same way. It's just what's wrong with them, and nobody knows. This is what I know. Nobody knows. But first of all,
do we know? Unfortunately, I mean, is this what they are? I don't know.
Well, if it is, you know, time to rebuild. I guess I'm not convinced that this coach is the answer. And by the way, booing your team just doesn't do anybody any good. So stop it. It's shameful. So just stop it. They know they played bad. They don't have to feel like you're now kind of attacking them, or you know, I mean, I know I'd feel pretty bad if somebody was booing me for not doing something right. So, but just there are so many things that frustrate me about this team right now. I'm ready. My seats are in 306 on the front row up there. I'm ready to stand up on the rail and just jump.
Here's don't one do that.
tell me if you're seeing this too, guys. Our passing is pathetic. It's like, I don't know if it's a result of the new system this coach is trying to install, but I see so many times when we're just dumping pucks off, like to where maybe somebody will be there or somebody's supposed to be there. I don't know what they're thinking, especially Kyle Turris. Anybody gets near him and he just like throws the puck over somewhere where somebody might be. It'd be great if there was somebody there, but there's not. And Yossi shouldn't have to be carrying the puck up from the defensive end all the way through center ice and into the offensive end. In fact, it kind of clogs it up for us because nobody's getting open. And you know, when I played, we called it heads up hockey. You got the puck in your defensive zone and you started looking up for the head man, for the guy breaking, and you got it to him. And then everybody started looking for open ice to get free. Our guys, I'm not seeing anybody get free, and I see a lot of passes going to guys that got one or two players already covering them. So are you seeing that?
Well, I can tell you this. You do not stand alone in that thought. I can tell you for sure there are a lot of people that feel that passing has been an issue all season. Forget just under John Hines. I think there were a lot of people that were concerned about what you're talking about under Peter Laviolette, you know, the 40 games prior to that. So, you know, I do think, to your point of, do you kind of use the basketball reference? Before, I kind of felt like under Peter Laviolette's system, it was you get the rebound and you just start dribbling up the court. I think they're trying to get away from that. I think that has been kind of the difference with John Hines, is he wants you to get the rebound, to yet again use a basketball reference, and get it to a guard to push it. A guard, a.k.a. a forward, right, in this case, and push the action, as opposed to, I think you've seen less. I mean, Roman Yossi's so skilled, it's hard to just tell him, don't do that. He's so good. But
and it's
trying
not
to
that
get
he's
away
doing it
from
wrong
Ekholm.
Either.
Right, it's trying to get away from the Ekholms and the Ellises and the Yossis and those guys pushing the action and more letting the forwards start the action through neutral ice and into the offensive zone. I think they are trying to – that has stood out to me. That has looked different under John Hines.
Well, yeah, I think Yossi would be better if somebody would get open when he starts winding it up. But nobody's getting open, and so the players that are forward of him get stacked up at the blue line, and then we've got no momentum other than him crossing into the blue line, and if nobody's open, he's going to end up having to puck handle around in the offensive zone while we either, I don't know what we're thinking, but nobody seems to get open. And then here's one more thing. We end up in these scrums in the corners and on the side dasher boards with like three guys in there. And again, if you get the puck out of there, you come out of it with the puck, nobody's open. Nobody's in front of the net. Nobody's angling for position so that you can do something when you get it. Just another level of frustration.
Yep. Okay. Thank you for the call, as always. Look, there's a lot of people frustrated. And by the way, what he was just talking about, that did happen to them in New Jersey, and it cost them a goal against the Devils. So a lot of play against the boards and a little miscommunication. Next thing you know, rather than peeling off, somebody joins the action and there's a guy wide open in front of the net. Luckily, it didn't cost them the game, but that did happen. We'll come back. Continue
on
this.
There's some news out of the Central Division.
Yep. I've been tracking this. It was actually starting to – there was if I think I know where you're going with this, it's the next opponent for the Predators.
Yep.
Yeah, that stuff started to – in fact, Elliot Friedman was putting stuff out there over the weekend. I noticed that. But we'll tell you what we're talking about to close up shop on the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase next. So next up will be Winnipeg tomorrow night. Jets and Predators up there in a very, very cold place. It'll be a 7 o'clock puck drop. Pre-game at 6, everything heard right here on 102.5 Game. Then it'll be Calgary on Thursday night. Edmonton, a 6 o'clock start on Saturday. So you would think it would be a little bit later. And Edmonton on Saturday, nope, 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock pregame. And then late night on Monday night with Vancouver to close out the Western Canada swing. So Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, and then Monday night against Vancouver. That'll be a 9 o'clock start. But there is news, and it was kind of getting out there, and I saw stuff from Elliot and others over the weekend that maybe this saga was about to come to a close, and it looks like from what TSN and others are reporting that maybe – indeed, Dustin Byfuglien and the Jets, that whole thing is about to wrap up. And maybe there's going to be resolution and they're going to get divorced, part ways, however you separate, yeah. Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, the Jets and Byfuglien are working on a mutual contract termination over the next several days, according to multiple sources, TSN putting this out there, which would formally end his suspension and bring a close to the grievance Byfuglien filed in November. So I guess at this point, it'll clear up cap space for Winnipeg before the trade deadline.
$7.6 million?
Yeah, yeah. So that's pretty significant, and it'll make Byfuglien, I guess, a free agent, and he can decide, you know, what he wants to do.
He would be a UFA.
Yeah. So he can resume his career with any team. That could be, as they say in the post, that could be next week, next season, or never again. So. Yep. He can decide. Now, I look at this and immediately go, okay, one, that's good because now Dustin Byfuglien, you don't have to worry about him coming back to the Jets because he's been a thorn in the Predators' backside. That's bad because you've cleared up cap space for them to make moves at the deadline and possibly get better. Now Bufflin's a free agent. What does he do? Does he want to play? You know, is his head in it? If it is... and I'm David Poile, I pick up the phone, I make a call, I gauge interest, because that's the kind of guy that we've been discussing that this team doesn't really have. They don't have that muck-it-up, skilled guy that, you know, you hate to play against, but you'd love to have him on your team. But you have to also make sure he's in it. Like, is he committed?
Well, that's the biggest thing, is anybody going to be able to find that out? I mean,
right,
is he done?
And it may not be this year.
Is he healthy, by the way?
Yeah.
He had ankle surgery in October.
Right.
I don't think he's been doing a ton of skating, has he?
Probably not.
I haven't heard much at all on that front. In fact, isn't that where they kind of got sideways?
Yeah.
Didn't feel like he was progressing the way they would like to see. What's his health status? What's his mindset? Where is he? Does he still want to play?
Yeah.
He's 34. Is he interested in this year? Is he interested in next year? Is he interested in right now?
Sure.
Is he capable of doing that?
And this would be a situation where
what's his price?
Right. Let's say tomorrow, and this is just for a discussion. I'm just going to say tomorrow it comes out that his contract's been terminated. Everything's good. They've parted ways. The Nashville Predators are signing him to a one-year, $3 million deal. You still have to... Or what? I guess there's a minimum or whatever they could sign him because it's this year. But they sign him. He comes in. It's still going to take, a month for him to get ready? I mean, it's just like a Mike Fisher situation.
I have no idea.
I mean, it wouldn't be one of those instant fixes, and he probably wouldn't be great, a la what Mike Fisher was when he came back. So I think that's another thing that you kind of have to factor in. For any team, whether it's the Preds or whatever team decides, you know, would take a chance on him. But again, it goes back to, does he want to play? Is he healthy enough to play? That is a question that I think will be, because I wonder if he's going to speak once this is resolved. Is he going to come out and give his side? Because you haven't really heard from him. But it is interesting that it appears that there is a resolution near between the Jets, the Predators' next opponent, and Dustin Byfuglien.
And where does he want to – remember, he's going to have his choice.
Yeah.
So – and what's on his mind? Is he like most guys at the end of their career? They want to go for it? You know, they want to be on what they deem as the best team out there that wants the services? I don't know. Or is he just looking for a good fit? Is he looking for a warm place? Is he looking for state with no income tax? I don't know. Right. What's on his list of what he wants?
Well, that's what we got to find out. And who knows, by the time we talk to Elliot on Thursday, we could have more of those answers. But time is going to tell. But, you know, it's a big development. And for the Jets, as you mentioned, $7.6 million in cap space that they now have at their disposal when they start looking at what they want to do in the next few weeks as the trade deadline approaches.
Very interesting. Not that this really changes anything
for
the storyline of tomorrow, because, I mean, quite honestly, Dustin Byfuglien's been out of sight, out of mind, really.
Yeah.
Other than every once in a while, like I said, I saw stuff over the weekend that maybe there were hints that maybe this was coming, but other than that, do I agree with what you said? Sure. They were looking for that guy to, no doubt. But the question is, how many people are going to be standing in line?
Yeah. And from the Predators' point of view, you know, if this were a road that they wanted to go down, how much does it really help them right now? I mean, at this point, with what we know is going on with this team, I mean, two steps forward, one step back, it's still very inconsistent. You know, how much does a move like that really help them? Is it the piece that, you know, he walks in and can rally the troops and all that? I don't think so, but I don't know that to be sure. That's another part of it. So I am very curious to see how this is going to shake out into our previous discussion of, you know, if you're the Predators, what do you do at the trade deadline? I gave you the answer that's the best one that I could give, that I think there's more changes in the offseason, and that's kind of what you have to get to. I don't see them really doing a whole lot that's going to fix it right now. So I don't stand pat necessarily, but I don't think there's a huge move that's going
to
fix this
thing. Are you willing to give up prospects?
You just refilled the cupboard.
That's what I'm getting at. I mean, that's what it's going to take.
Yeah,
or at least a prospect and a draft pick, for somebody that's...
Yeah, but I'm leaning towards it. I think they're more in sell mode than buy mode. Not full-on sell mode.
Right, I know what you mean.
But hockey move mode, I think, is the best way to put it. Like, you know, I'm throwing out names just for this conversation. I don't want to see them trade Nick Bonino, but Nick Bonino is probably going to give you some value if you move him right now.
Problem is, you don't get a lick better.
No.
By doing that.
You get worse.
He's been one of their better players all year.
Rocco Grimaldi, same thing. That line, like Craig Smith, Bonino, Rocco Grimaldi probably give you some value, but those are three guys that have been your best players for a majority of the year.
It's been the most consistent line all season.
Yeah. So that's the tough decision.
I go back to, I don't believe that if you were to shed, that necessarily means you're giving up or you're blowing up. I just think sometimes if something isn't working, like I said, you hear sometimes addition by subtraction. If something's not working,
mm-hmm.
and you're just trying to mix up some things, sometimes that can work in your favor.
At what point do you accept, you know what, this year, not in the cards, I have to start looking at beyond, and do you, and I hate saying it this way, but do you throw in the towel and say, I got to start worrying about the future? Because I can't fix it right now.
I don't think February 3rd is your answer.
No.
What is your answer? I don't know, but it's not February 3rd.
Because things are inconsistent, but consistent enough to keep you holding on.
I can tell you we can answer it on April 3rd.
Sure. Yeah.
We'll have an answer.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because you'll know what we're doing. We'll know what we're doing beyond that.
There's just one game left.
Yeah. Are we preparing for the offseason, or are we preparing for a trip?
Yeah. A lot of truth to that. I can answer it better in 2 months.
There you go.
That doesn't do it. That doesn't do David Poyle a lick of good.
Now he's listening.
There's a trade deadline well before that.
He's listening to us right now, thinking Chase and Darren have all the answers for me, and he's probably just turned to Willie. They haven't answered anything.
Yep. A lot of truth to that. By the way, the Falcons have put out there that they will not pursue negotiations with Vic Beasley this offseason.
I saw that.
Interesting. All right, we'll come back. Fourth and final hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.